Good afternoon and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, July 7th, 2000. In the Creekside Room this afternoon, Phil Anderson continues his study entitled On Borders and Beliefs, U.S. Policy and Practice Vis-a-vis a Faith-Based Vision for Response to the Uprooted Migrants and Refugees. Today's topic is listening to your immigration history story. What's new today? This is session ANP 2000-4. Let's listen in.
My name is Phil Anderson. I work at present with the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. I live in Washington for the last, Washington, D.C., that is. For the last 2.5 years, I've been doing public policy work vis-a-vis Congress, the White House, State Department, Immigration and Naturalization Service. And that's all been extreme education for me. But I've spent a lot of time in Latin America. And given the fact that there's a lot of migration now from Latin America, from the South, and a lot of activity along the U.S. southern border, it was decided that maybe we ought to do more as the church at trying to understand what's going on there, educate ourselves, do some education within our churches, and try to speak out more about what's going on there, and to the extent possible, be a part of efforts to do something different that will change the status quo of what's happening along the border. So that's what I do. I worked in Mexico, all of Central America, and Colombia during about 25 years, and have spent a bit of time in Africa. So I have some appreciation of kind of what's happening in the world. I try to follow world events a lot. So we've had sessions this week on refugees. That's sort of the bread and butter of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. You know, where are they, who are they? Internally displaced people, of which there are actually more internally displaced people for basically the same reason someone might become a refugee. The only difference being you haven't crossed an international border. So we did that. And then we talked about the U.S. southern border. We have a little map over here, U.S., United States, Mexico, Central America, the Caribbean. Unfortunately, it doesn't have all of the U.S.-Canada border because, in fact, there are some interesting comparisons, contrasts, and the like. But at any rate, that's there. Today we're going to focus a little bit more on some of our own stories, our own history, hopefully be a little more interactive than than sessions have allowed for over the last couple of days. I'd like to begin with the biblical passage that is the theme for Holden this summer from Galatians, which it's amazing how these biblical texts, they can work in so many ways, some wondrous ways, and you can fit themes in and around, and they do speak to us, they speak to our situation. So this is from Galatians 3. For in Christ you are all children of God through faith. As many of you were baptized into Christ, have clothed yourselves with Christ. There is no longer Jew or Greek, U.S., Mexican, Canadian, Salvadoran. There is no longer slave or free, the boss and the servant. There is no longer male and female. What then? I'm not sure. But we might understand each other, at least. For all of you are one. All of you are one in Christ Jesus. And if you belong to Christ, then you are Abraham's offspring, heirs according to the promise. And that heirs according to the promise is the primary theme. And so the question is, whose promise And to whom? Who receives the promise? And basically, I think the biblical message, our Christian message is, it's God's promise to all that there be life and have it abundantly. Now that's rather astounding. So when we talk about borders, it gets wrapped up in some different things. Actually, then we get involved in accidents of history. You know, the creation of nation states, you know, that at one point really didn't exist. All of a sudden now there's a border, and someone defines this region as that's mine and that's yours, and you know, then we get into this them and us, and there are borders. And some of that is fairly recent history, particularly in this part of the world. And in fact, you know, some of this border was only defined a little over 150 years ago when we usurped a lot of that from Mexico, you know that. So borders are relative kinds of things, but they can become very real in many ways in terms of our gut, in terms of our identity, in terms of then huge issues about sovereignty, national security, and the like. And so we build up all of this stuff because we've defined a border. We have defined a border, which is not an objective reality, like it's a God-given thing. It's just somehow, all of a sudden, we've got a border. Okay, so we're going to do two or three things today. First, I really want to take some time and for us to share and listen to one another about how we understand our own migration, immigration, history, experience to the United States, or Canada, or wherever. And we want to just name those places from which our ancestors came. And maybe say a name of that first or second ancestor who came, and maybe a city. From where did that those people come? Who were they? Who, you know, to whom do I look as kind of my link somewhere else? So that'll be stage one. We'll share that. Then we're going to do a little sharing, one-on-one. Just tell a little bit about what you understand your story to be with one other person. But what we want to look for in that are sort of what are the themes of why that migration took place. And we'll put some of that up here on the board. And then we'll try to work with that for a little while. Then I'd like to look kind of currently in your community. Who are the newcomers in your community? Where have they come from? What are the names? What are the experiences that they have had? I'd like to conclude, if there's time, though this may be the least of it, with just a few kind of observations, concluding remarks, some ticklers to leave with all of us as we struggle with border issues right now. It helps me. This week has been tremendous because there's, in Washington, D.C., things are going just lickety-split all the time, and there isn't really a community to just lay out ideas, to think, to reflect, and to even try to stretch the envelope of what we're trying to understand, and much less within the framework of what does this mean for us as a people of faith. I mean, Washington, that's not where you talk from a point of view of faith. Even if you're there pretty much as a church representative, that's almost a non-starter, you know. You can say, well, my church, but that's a political force, you know, but it's a tough go if you go in and say, well, because God or my understanding of Christ, that doesn't wash, you know, although that may be your conviction. Last night's worship was very powerful. It was in silence. Many of you undoubtedly were there. Some maybe arrived today, so didn't have part of that. just like you to take a deep breath and think and reflect. And then please, when you're ready, go up to the board, grab one of these magic markers, and write the name of that ancestry that you have. Maybe a country, maybe a city, a name. And as you're doing that, it's not just to name it, but you're thinking about that. You know, what you know about that. Maybe even feel about that. And just put, for now, the name. But you're doing that kind of out of spirit of remembering, recalling, perhaps thanks, perhaps inquisitiveness, I don't know a lot, whatever that is. So when you're ready, please do that, and we'll have a little mosaic. In our conversation yesterday, we had a little conversation about the United States, and someone used the term assimilation, and we kind of said, well, is that in fact what happens, you know, and there's a lot of diversity. Here's our kind of another image. It might be a salad, you know, that's really, it's a mix of things, you know, and there are lots of little goodies in there, and they maintain their integrity, and it makes this great, luscious pot. And I think that, or a mosaic, you know, this is kind of a mosaic, and this is just this little room. There's a lot of richness and interesting stuff, St. Petersburg, the whole notion of the slavery. I mean, people forcibly ripped out Austria, Sweden, Denmark, lots of Norway here, England, Germany, and that's just this small room, Catalunya, España, that's just this small room. And then you amplify that by, you know, the people in this village this week and other places. So we'll set that aside a little bit. Now, why don't you just take a few minutes and talk with someone near you, not a spouse, and just talk a little bit about your own, what you understand, you know about those who came to this land. And then let's look at the reasons. We'll come back, and in one way or another, we'll put those reasons up here, the motivations, what motivated people to come. Okay, go ahead and do that. Hope you'll get a chance to continue your stories with one another. And maybe you can invite some other people in the village to share some of those stories too with you, and just ask, you know, what's going on? Where'd you come from in your family history? Okay, two things now that kind of relate. One is the motivation for having come to this new world, as it were, or to the U.S., what became the U.S. And of course, the experience was different for different people at different times, different ethnic groups, perhaps the very motivations for which they came. But they're also kind of with the motivations for having left. What was the experience upon arrival? How did they fit in? Someone told me today when I just talked about doing this that they actually, their family, as soon as they arrived, it was kind of a shame. They felt ashamed. And I hadn't heard that in that term before. But that they really didn't want, they just lopped off from where they had come. And they really didn't think about that anymore or talk about that anymore. Now I'm going to ask you to do those things on the board again, because again, I think it's best if you do that with your, out of what you want to put out there. Motivations for having come, and it could be all in that same mix, because in fact some of this is going on at the same time. Different people, different motivations for leaving. At the same time, there's different feelings about those who may have already come, or it's all entwined. So let's try to do that for a few minutes again on one of these sheets of paper.
Go ahead.
Why did your ancestors come? What motivated them to come? And in a word or two or three, whatever, some expression of how you think they felt. Were they elated? Did they, you know, this is great. Oh, I made a mistake. I want to go back. This is the greatest opportunity since sliced bread.
Those German Baptists were fleeing from those horrid Lutherans.
You want me to put that up there?
That's right. Right, including Martin Luther.
And this Calvino was more. This was a Baptist victim. Grandmother came here from Sweden. She was a, looks over the adventure of serving. She came from Sweden, lived in New York for a couple of years and worked for a boarding Jewish employer with people. And so she really became quite a gourmet cook.
That's interesting. Somebody used the words that are often used in this kind of issue, push-pull factor. Push, what was the driving force, and what was the incentive? Why come here on this side? Yeah. This, or magnets, you know, what are the magnets? Sticks and carrots. Except the double L, but that's actually a separate letter. It's considered a
the only one I see.
Yeah, and the same. Yeah. I think the same. See? To put it?
Like axiom.
Axiom.
Great grandparents.
Friction. And the L. But the, as I say, that's really considered another letter.
People are now calling it three double L. They stopped calling it
that. Do that.
Yeah.
I know that was good.
Did you know that?
Yeah,
but then there's double R. Well, double R, of course. Because that's another letter.
Other side, mother side, learned the kingdom of the Lord by the country.
Very good. Again, we have a little mosaic. and a snapshot just from a very, very small group of some very human experiences, kinds of human experiences that we've read about this week in the Bible studies in some ways, the human experience of migration, like why did Joseph go down to Egypt and the brothers, you know, there was famine in the land, you know. This is interesting. Educational opportunities, say on this side, right? Someone had a chance. And, you know, may not be that there were none, no educational opportunities there, but the variety or the kind of educational person that opportunities that attracted that individual to come. You know, or in the case of some places, maybe in fact there are no educational opportunities. And so, wow, if I'm going to educate my kids, let's migrate, huh? Due to World War. War. Man, that's a big push factor. That's a big push factor. Found isolation when they came. That's interesting. Language barriers. Very clear that those are out there. Loneliness. Wow. Yeah, that must be, it must be a difficult experience, which, and you know, obviously a lot of that is found today, huh? Those loneliness for someone coming to a new city, you're lost, you don't know. We've been watching this video, a guy comes, he's looking for his family, goes even to the wrong door, he's got the wrong direction, he has no, doesn't know where to go. Amazing. Religious persecution. Does anyone know where that kind of stuff is happening today? Is it still happening today?
Absolutely.
Yeah? A push factor. Where?
Bosnia.
Okay. Religious, ethnic. And sometimes it goes very close together in our identity. Explain that.
They're all, yeah. I mean, they're the same people, but, you know, they...
Okay, you got the Muslims, obviously.
Yeah, the Muslims in the Serbs are of the same ethnic Slavic.
Okay. And the Serbs are what of what religious?
Orthodox.
Yeah. But they
by and large. Yeah.
Even if you're an atheist, you're still Orthodox or you're Muslim.
And the Croats.
Catholic, huh?
And the Croats.
They're Roman Catholic. Yeah.
Okay, and the Albanians.
Muslim,
but
some not Orthodox.
Really not all that practicing.
No.
Not quite like the Bosnian Muslims.
They aren't either.
Yeah, and they're not as much. Okay, interesting.
But it's interesting.
Anywhere else?
Because they come, because if they're not practicing there, almost when they come to America, they become practicing because that's the community that
uh-huh. Interesting. Okay. Interesting. So in that whole migration thing, their whole identity and their religious identity may begin to change too. Would that have happened to any of us in our experience, you know, in our ancestry? Where else? Religious persecution?
Sudan.
What's going on there?
Muslim, Christian,
North, South, Arab, African, you know, again, kind of combination. It's not like all one thing. It's all mixed up. Anywhere else in the world where...
Protestants, Catholics, the Northern Ireland.
Okay, interesting.
They're getting another condition. I think contemporary, although it's not so much Hindu and Muslim in India, although that's... a little bit older, the 40s, but still they massacre each other by the thousands.
Well, what's going on right now with Kashmir, mm-hmm. you know,
Sri Lanka,
Pakistan,
Sri Lanka.
Yeah, Sri Lanka, which, okay, that may be more an ethnic thing. China is certainly one where some of the conservative right would point to, where there's religious persecution, and not just of the Christians, this Falun Gong organization. So you get members of Congress really clamoring for, you know, how we do foreign policy vis-a-vis China, for example. So, okay, what else have we got here? So somebody else pick that up. Peasant stock with no help, no hope for bettering themselves. So it's kind of like if some aspirations, there's a drive. I'm not going to conform to being like this forever and pass that on to my kids and their kids and their kids. I'm going to look for new horizons, cost what it might. Leave my old country behind, go and find new opportunity where perhaps I can, as this says, better myself in a way. Powerful motivation. Work. Paid away from Sweden. Grandmother paid away. That's interesting. People.
Well, she was an indentured servant. The family paid her away. I didn't say it clearly. For her to.
You think that's still going on today?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
She had to live with them for 2 years.
Yes. Have you heard about the Chinese coming to the United States now and Canada? You know what it costs now? Per head? $30,000 to $60,000 a head. Imagine how long it takes to pay that off. I was just in New York City. We took a little walking tour of Lower Manhattan, and we were down in Chinatown, Little Italy there, and the guide showed us the sweatshops, of the Chinese, that are in there working at probably, $5.50 an hour. Imagine how long it would take to pay off $30,000 to $60,000 at that kind of a wage.
Paid on piecework.
Yeah, yeah. Or paid on piecework. Yeah, okay. So there's a lot of interesting things there, and let's just leave that economic promise, anonymity, desire for anonymity. Some, what does that mean?
If you're gay in rural Iowa, you want to come to the city.
Okay, very interesting. Okay, they're making, Yeah, boy, that's a very interesting thing, yeah. I was just thinking also, there may be others in that category, that look for anonymity, not in that category of being gay. Criminals. It's a good way to reestablish your identity. Start over.
Years ago, people who were in interracial marriages.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Sure, you had to migrate, perhaps. Yeah. Or interreligious marriages.
Or young women having children.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. Yeah. All these forces that move us around. All of these forces. And the cost that implies. Separation from family, from home, from the known to the unknown. Taking some big leaps of faith. Crossing some borders. Changing your life. You don't know what the future is. You had a past that you kind of, you were comfortable with, and you're just leaping out there. Man, that's tremendous stuff. Okay, time flies. Whew, man. real quick then, why don't we, again, just go on up there and put down new ethnic groups in your, or the newcomers in your communities. And we're not going to have a lot of time to talk about this. But just, the migration continues.
You guys need the whole page, huh?
Yeah, the migration continues. We were a small snapshot of who we are. Now who do we see around us? Who do we see around us? In our most immediate community, or people we work with, people we relate to on a day-to-day basis, or even have to buy our coffee from, or fill our gas tank, or whatever it is.
They're all within walking distance of my house. West Seattle.
I go
downtown because you're
going to be in the county. The only one they have in North Mexico is a
Then I go down around the corner, and there is a little convenience market run by California. And then after that,
and if you go to
the Chinese, right?
You got
to
put down Dunkin' Donuts, it's run by Indians.
And then if any kind of a hotel, it's run by Patels.
Patels, right?
Yes, but you go, and then you go,
that's
and
there's
a cleaners are run by Koreans. It's just all in there. Then there was a.
Do Microsoft and
It's a common category.
Phil?
Yes.
Microsoft millionaires.
Yeah,
it's people with the work. Look where we are. Newcomers.
Sure.
That's in your neighborhood, huh?
See
that? They're fleeing economic depression.
Opportunity.
Thanks, Steve. The house is paying up, right?
I mean, that's what comes to Whitney.
Well, I don't know where my tape went.
Driving the prices up.
Oh, for sure.
Not commerce.
Sharing down.
It's a big problem. They're driving up Latino community.
Does anyone see my roll of tape?
Well, money is such a powerful thing.
Okay, so let's see. Central and South Americans, Haitians, Arabs. This is interesting, and Central and South Americans, that's great. But, and that's true. It's very generic. It's not as specific as some of the stuff we put up here. Like, I came from St. Petersburg, I came from Russia. You know, it's like saying this person is from somewhere over in Europe or Asia or something, you know.
But you know, in our neighborhood, it's predominantly Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first wave of change was Mexican community, and you know, it's not happening anymore.
Yeah.
They're coming.
Wow.
But I don't know exactly from where.
I didn't put it in there, but you can add Dominican Republic.
Right, DR. Okay, the DR. Yeah. In fact, the DR in New York City is like still the largest immigrant group in New York City are the Dominicans, which is really cool. Okay, then, wow, here's one. Samoans, Russian, Ethiopian, Hindu Indians, Filipinos, Mexicans, Lao, Vietnamese, Cambodians, Ukrainians, Koreans. That's a phenomenal list. Mexicans working in Christmas trees, Russian Latinos, California, again, Latinos. I mean, it's very generic. It may be, those are labels that we use that are shorthand, but it doesn't say much about who, because as many of you know, I mean, a salvadoreño is muy diferente que un cubano or whatever. There's a lot of nuances in there. So, Californians moving. Chinese, South Korean, Yemeni, that's interesting. Yemeni, that Filipinos, Thai, Korean, Tongan, from?
Tonga.
Uh-huh. I'm not even familiar with that. South Pacific, Mexico, Samoan, East. You know, there again, that's interesting because in some areas, of course, more, say, Pacific Islanders and things more on this coast, evidently, than in some other places. East Indians, Iowans. Ukrainian Jews, Vietnamese, Palestinians, .commerce. There you go. Right. One very interesting thing that I'd like to study a little bit more, but I just want to throw it out there, is that one of the products of wars of where, say, the United States has intervened or been involved is that we then get an immigrant influx, you know? The Filipinos, Mexicans, Vietnamese, Cambodians, Koreans, it's interesting that some of that is a direct byproduct of having been involved in war. Salvadorans, Guatemalans, Nicaraguans, and the like. That's it. Okay. We're not going to have a lot of time to deal with that, but that's interesting. I did lose my tape. So could I get help from somebody to tape this piece up real quick using this tape? We'll just have to tape it up with this and let the other one fall on this. One of the sessions that I think we had, we talked about borders and we used two aspects. There's poetry to all of this, and there's plumbing. I mean, you can get down to the objective stuff about borders, defining what's going on along this line. Or, again, as we said at the outset, you know, this is an accident of history, and it's not an objective reality. It has that quality to the extent that we ascribe it that quality. And so there's mostly what we're talking about when we talk about borders is what's going on in our own minds and how we have perceived the reality of the world. And if we as the church, and if we take seriously this Galatian scriptures, we are all heirs of the promise that, and we are all children in this one family, then it's, what do these borders really mean for us as people of faith? They take on a relative significance, not an absolute significance in terms of my national identity and sovereignty for my nation. And so I've just put down to conclude this week, and to the extent we can, we might want to discuss some of this. And is, again, very fascinating here in the village because we get a chance to talk about all sorts of ideas, concepts, and from a variety of disciplines. So I've learned a lot of things and I've been eavesdropping on some issues. By the way, the video that was shown on the anti-racism work, phenomenal video that picked up the immigrant voice and word today. So I want to thank you for bringing that. It all interlocks, huh? And we need to think very eclectically and in an interdisciplinary way. And unfortunately, in the world I live in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill, that's not the way things are. It's black and white. I need to vote yes or no. And there are very few places for shades and nuances. And both that's good and bad. I mean, for one thing, it means things kind of, radical change doesn't happen fast where we could make a lot of huge mistakes. You know, it takes time. But also it means it does, it's agonizing, some of the changes. So I want to just throw out a few things. And part of this comes out of, the only constant is change when we're talking about this migration issue. And again, I mean, this hasn't been this way forever, and it probably won't be that way forever. And that comes as a pretty astounding thing to a lot of people. And there's a lot wrapped up in how we understand this as we see it now, and just how we go about our policies and invest our money. You know, we are putting... The largest law enforcement agency of the United States is the U.S. Border Patrol. Largest law enforcement agency in the United States, U.S. Border Patrol. Probably means it's the largest law enforcement agency in the world. Law enforcement agency, not an army or something, but... And we're putting that down here. And to some lesser extent, you know, on the U.S. border, and they work our Canadian border, and they work in other parts of the world too. But you know, that's a huge investment, and you kind of wonder why. From our geology friend, you know, 450 million years ago, there were dinosaurs here. They're not here now. You know, there were volcanoes, there were earthquakes, and somehow things changed. Even though we want to keep it the same or think that it's going to be this way forever, you know, those dinosaurs were long here for a lot of years, they did disappear, you know. So we don't know what the future of that border is. I just came from a very phenomenal conference, and actually a process over the last 2 years, post-NAFTA, 1994, Canadians, U.S., Mexican people getting together and talking. And particularly after 1996, when there was this ludicrous idea, according to the Canadians, that everybody who enters and exits the United States has to register when you cross the border. So you check in and check out, just like you're, I don't know, going to the library or something. And, you know, they're saying that's going to back us up forever. And right now, their conversation is that within 5 to 10 years, there won't be any border controls on our U.S. northern border, on the U.S.-Canadian border. There won't be. You'll just come right across. They're saying, what's the point of making this little ridiculous stop to show some paper or say, I'm Canadian or I'm U.S.? or whatever. And the people in Washington State know that very well, that conversation is going on. Huh? And it's the commerce people that are pushing that primarily. Since NAFTA, the amount of flow across the border has accelerated tremendously. So geology, we can learn something. You know, it's not going to remain the same. It's not static. Yes?
In Europe, the borders are... Europe Kingdom is just...
Right. I just crossed...
Try to make a common...
Not long ago, from Portugal into Spain, and I've never crossed a border like that. I mean, you come up to the border, and there's these old destroyed little posts that, and you kind of creep across because you're not familiar. But no, it's open. Go. You know, it's incredible. And, you know, I wasn't carrying drugs and I wasn't a terrorist. And, you know, so.
Would it really be that terrible if there was no border control on the Mexican border? Would we get overrun by Mexicans? Would it turn over into a Mexican state, or would it sort of...
Interesting question. We can't get into that much. I am going to leave with you a document by a friend who is saying that what we need to do is enter into that conversation. Who's willing to have that conversation? I'd say it's the church that ought to be really in the conversation. We're not the only ones. But are we willing to even address that? And what's our contribution to that conversation? Okay, the border is a prism. It's not in itself a line that defines everything, but it's kind of a looking glass. It defines a lot of stuff about identity and values. And the border is an ecology. It's not like a wall. We can make it a wall, but it's an ecology where there things along this border have a relationship, and there's an interdependency. And I'd say that interdependency is increasing, right? And so, in response to your question, you know, why, if this interdependency of this ecology is flowing, why would we put a wall there to stop an ecology that works very, very well, that could work very well if we don't interrupt it? And we are, in fact, building a wall. We are building a wall. There's about 200 miles of wall, just like this. You know, it's metal and barbed wire. Now along our U.S. southern border, and so we have to look at that. That's part of this prism. Why are we doing that? I thought we just had this image for 50 years of the Berlin Wall, you know, that we wanted to take down. Now we're building a wall, you know, on our southern border. Okay, we, the U.S., are or is not alone in all of these questions of migration and the question of national security and identity. And this goes on all over in different pockets. We're not alone in this. So it's not like a guilt trip, like, you know, we're the only ones that are struggling with these isolation questions or national identity questions or foreigners coming in, illegal aliens. No, this is a worldwide phenomenon that we can learn from many, many others. There's some good things going on, and some, look at how easily, not so easily, but the wall did come down between Germany and East Germany, and it wasn't the end of the world. Not every East German immediately went over to what was West Germany, right? Yeah, so, you know, it's possible, huh? Okay, what are the meaning of borders, nation states, creation of the 17th, 18th, 19th century, in the second millennium on issues such as security, globalization. Do we, in fact, get our security from, you know, trying to guard this 2,000-mile border and whatever it is along 3,000-mile U.S.-Canadian border? Is that from where our security comes? Yeah, well, you know, it's really some interesting stuff to talk about and to think about. Now, I have a little contention. My wife Mavis has been doing a lot of work on Cuba, as you know, and it's been really stimulating, I think, which remains kind of, for America, one of those last bastions of the Cold War and a barrier over which we need to overcome. And I think we're getting there. You know, it might not be this year, but 2, 3, 4, 5 more years, I think there'll be some significant change, and we may move toward normalization of relationships with even Cuba. Unbelievable. Just like we did with Vietnam a few years ago, where we now have an ambassador and trade and 10% increase in per year in their gross national product. I mean, it's booming, huh? Now we're there. 54,000 American lives and died, 3 million Vietnamese were there. I mean, we haven't lost that many in Cuba. East-West Germany, new picture. Relationship with the USSR, new picture with Russia. You know, it's possible that there's change. The two Koreas are now even talking to each other. China, you know, into the World Trade Organization. And, you know, phenomenal change. But so here we got Cuba, that might be some change after 41 years, 50 years. But within that is this whole thing of the U.S. vis-a-vis the rest of Latin America, the Caribbean, which we've got a 508-year history, 1492, of the relationship of this people in this land, now called the U.S., to the rest of the continent. And I'd suggest, that particularly vis-a-vis Mexico, that that's going to be our next struggle. And it is already a struggle. How are we going to relate to this land? And as I suggested in one of the sessions now, with the rather remarkable elections last Sunday in Mexico, where the PRI was defeated heavily by about a 2/3 to 1/3 margin, there's a new moment there. What's the political leadership of the United States going to do vis-a-vis that new political leadership in Mexico? But I'd say here we've got all of the components of the racism, just phenomenal stuff that we have to overcome in terms of our relationship to the people of the south of that border. Or we're going to continue, I'd say, exacerbating problems and not resolving the problems at all. So that, for the next 10, 15, 20, maybe longer years, that's going to be one of our primary foreign policy, foreign domestic policy issues. Because really, even things like Iraq and Iran and Israel and, you know, somehow those things are distant, and they're going to take.
Backyard.
Yeah, this is right here. Okay.
The only way that border is ever going to get eliminated is when the Mexican economy.
Okay.
Is it's not maybe on a par with ours, but it's much further along than it is now.
And we mentioned within the European community, when they conceived of the notion in the early 60s, maybe even the 50s, there was an economic disparity about 1 to 10 between the most wealthy and the least less developed. Now that disparity is about 1 to 3. And you don't find all the Portuguese pulling up and going to Germany. You know, they're staying there. So they were very clear that, yes, we have to address that. So do we, so does Mexico. Mexico has to get its act together. They're not going to do it alone. And where, what is our self-interest in helping them along there? Yes.
But I think if anybody wants to come to this country, you pretty much can already. So what's the point of a border?
Except there's a great risk. Man. They can get in, but at great risk and at great sacrifice, and there's a lot of issues there. We think we could come up with some clever ideas to make that more humane, you know, for people to migrate. Then I just, one last thing. I think we need to listen to the stories of border crossings. people who are crossing those borders, and there again, I think this week has been interesting. I particularly say the gay lesbian question about crossing borders, of identity, of bridging from the gay to the straight community. Listening to those voices, and today I was out on a little walk and up to Ten Mile Creek, and you know, you can't hear that creek from very far away. You got to get up close and to hear the voice, to hear the creek. And you got to get up there, and really to know what the power of that is, you got to get in there. You almost have to jump in that creek and live with, be one with. And that's, so that's the incarnational thing. And within all of that, the message certainly of this week and of our Bible study leader, Bishop Steve, you know, he did the piece on the floods. You know, it can look like it's pretty overwhelming, and it looks like it could destroy us. But he comes down in the story of Noah, and it says, "And God remembered Noah." And that was kind of the message for all of us. And God remembers us, and so we have to trust. And so, this magnificent earth that we have the privilege of enjoying here at Holden and throughout the world, it is all the Lord's. Let us all rejoice and be glad in it. This all could change in a twinkle of an eye, and this geology of millions of years. We are, when we talk even about history, that is a history in the smallest print in God's universe of creation. So let's enjoy the ride.
Thank you.